Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear viewers, this is the third episode of the 17th topic that we began some sessions ago. If you recall, we have been discussing the narrative which says that the Quran was revealed on seven Ahruf. We have already discussed three interpretations of this narrative earlier on, and inshallah, in today's session, I will try to present before you the fourth major interpretation of this narrative. As I had said earlier on, that this narrative has many interpretations. Over 30-35 have been recorded by various people, but I have selected seven major amongst them, and of these I have already presented three, and today I shall present the fourth one. Now, this fourth interpretation actually says that the Sabatu Ahruf actually refers to seven dialects of Arabia, and the person or the people, the prominent people who hold this view include Abu Ubaid Qasim ibn Salam, Abu Hatim Sajistani, Ahmad ibn Yahya Sa'lab, Bahiqi, and Ibn Atiyah. And Zarkashi and Suyuti both have recorded the names of these people, these authorities who actually hold this view. And therefore, according to them, the Quran has been revealed in seven dialects. So now I'm going to point out some of the bases of this view which have been put forth by these authorities. Now, first of all, I'd like to present before you Abu Ubaid himself, the foremost person in this regard, who thinks that the seven Ahruf actually refers to seven dialects. And he has cited his view in his book, Gharibul Hadith. So, his words are, وَلَيْسَ مَعْنَاهُ أَن يَكُونَ فِي الْحَرْفِ الْوَاحِدْ سَبَتُ أَوْجِهِنْ هَذَا مَا لَمْ يُسْمَعْ قَتْ أي نزل على سبع لغات متفرقة في القرآن فبعضه نزل بلغة قريش وبعضه بلغة هزيل وبعضه بلغة تميم وبعضه بلغة أزد وربيع وبعضه بلغة هوازن وسعد بن بكر وكذلك سائر اللغات ومعانيها في هذا كله واحدة. And this does not mean that a single harf can be read in seven ways. This never has ever been heard before. It means that these seven dialects are dispersed in the Quran. Some of the Quran has been revealed in the dialect of the Quraysh, some in the dialect of Hawazin, some in the dialect of Huzail, and in the dialect of Yemen, and similarly, all other dialects, such that the meaning of each of these dialects remains the same. The second person that I'm going to cite before you is Abu Hatim Sajistani. And Abu Hatim has written this in his this has been actually cited by Suyuti, and he says فَبَعْضُهُ نَزَلَ بِلُغَةِ قُرَيْشِ وَهُزَيْلِ وَتَمِيمِ وَأَزْدْ وَرَبِيعَ وَحَوَازِنْ وَسَعْدُ بْنُ بَكْرِ. So some of it was revealed in the dialect of the Quraysh, some in the dialect of Huzail, some in that of Tamim, some in that of Azd, and some in that of Rabia, some in that of Hawazin, and some in that of Sa'd ibn Bakr. Now, while giving examples of various dialects of Arabia, Ibn Qutayba in his Ta'wil Mushkil al-Quran says that people of the Huzail tribe would read Hatta Heen, which is a verse of Surah Muminun, the 54th verse, as Atta Heen. So they would change the Ha into an Ain. Similarly, those of the Asad tribe would read Taswaddu Wujuh as Tiswaddu Wujuh. So they would change the fatha into a kasra. The third person which I'm going to present before you is Ibn Atiyah, and his narrative or his view has been recorded by Qurtubi in his tafsir. So here's what Ibn Atiyah said. He says, "Ma'na qala an-nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam unzila al-quran wala sabati ahruf ay fihi ibaratu sab'i qabail bil lughati jumlataha nazala al-quran." فيعبر عن المعنى فيه مرة بعبارة قريش ومرة بعبارة هزيل ومرة بغير ذلك بحسب الأفصح والأوجز في اللفظ. ألا ترى إن فطر معنى عند غير قريش ابتداء خلق الشيء وعمله فجاءت في القرآن فلم تتجه لابن عباس حتى اختسم إليه أعرابيان في بئر فقال أحدهما أنا فطرتها قال ابن عباس ففهمت هنا إذن موزع قوله تعالى فاطر السماوات والأرض وقال إذن ما كنت أدري معنى هنا إذن موزع قوله تعالى ربنا افتح بيننا وبين قومنا بالحق حتى سمعت بنت زي يزن تقول لزوجها تعال أفاتحك أي أحاكمك. وكذلك قال عمر بن الخطاب وكان لا يفهم معنى قوله تعالى أو يأخذهم على تخوف أي على تنقص لهم. وكذلك اتفق لقطبة بن مالك إذا سمع النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم يقرأ في الصلاة والنخل باسقات، ذكره مسلم في باب القراءات في صلاة الفجر إلى غير ذلك من الأمثلة. The meaning of the Prophet's narrative that the Quran was revealed on seven Ahruf is that to convey certain meanings, the dialect of the Quraysh was used, and for certain meanings, that of the Huzail was used, and similarly, others for certain other meanings, depending upon which one was more eloquent and concise. Don't you see that the meaning of the word Fatr in dialects other than the Quraysh is to initiate? Thus, this word occurs in the Quran, and Ibn Abbas was not able to understand it until the matter of a dispute between two Bedouins regarding a will was referred to him. So one of them said, Ana Fatartuha, which meant, I initiated it. Ibn Abbas says that it was after hearing this that he was able to understand the Quranic verse, Fatirus Samawati wal Ard. He is the initiator of the heavens and the earth. He also said, I was not able to understand the verse, Rabbanaftah bainana wa baina qawmina bilhaq, our Lord, decide with justice between us and our people, until I heard the daughter of Binti Ziyizan say to her husband, Ta'al ufatihka, which means, let's go and have our case decided. A similar confession was made by Umar when he was not able to understand the meaning of the verse, Aw ya'khuzahum ala takhawwuf, which means, or snatches them in fear, which is verse 47 of Surah Nahl, which meant ala tanakkus, in a state where their blessings were being continuously diminished. And similar is the case of Qutbah ibn Malik when he stated the Prophet recite the words, when he heard the Prophet recite the verse wa nakhla basiqat in tall palm trees, which is verse 10 of Surah Qaf, the 50th Surah, during the prayer, as narrated by Imam Muslim in his chapter on recitation in the Fajr prayer. And there are other examples also of this type. So viewers, you can see in this regard that various references have been given in this regard. And as I said earlier on, I will go into more detail regarding these references, because each of these references actually is a narrative ascribed to earlier authorities. So if you remember, the first of them related to the word Fatr. So now I'm going to recite before you this narrative, and this is actually found in Tabri's Jami al-Bayan. So the words are, قَالَ سَمِعْتُ بِنْ عَبَّاسِ يَقُولُ كُنْتُ لَا أَدْرِي مَا فَاتِرُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ حَتَّى أَتَانِي أَعْرَابِيَانِ يَخْتَصِمَانِ فِي بِعْرٍ قَالَ أَحَدُهُمَا لِصَاحِبِهِ أَنَا فَطَرْتُهَا يَقُولُ أَنَا ابْتَدَأْتُهَا. So, ana ibtadatuha would mean that I began it. So, Mujahid says that he heard Ibn Abbas say, I did not know what was meant by Fatir Samawati wal Ard until two Bedouins who were disputing between a well came to me, and one of them said to the other, ana fatartuha, that is, I initiated it. So, this is the first reference which Ibn Athiyah has actually cited very concisely. So, I would just like to give the narratives which are in the background and which are actually citing these words, because Ibn Athiyah has not referenced them. So it's important to study these narratives as well, because later on we'll be discussing their content vis-a-vis their chain of narration as well. The sixth second reference in this regard, viewers, was the fact that if you recall the words Rabbanaftah bainana wa baina qawmina bilhaq actually were under discussion, and it is said that Ibn Abbas was not able to understand what the word fath means here. So now this narrative, I would also like to posit here, is also cited by Tabri in his tafsir. So the actual narrative, as you can see, is being displayed before you. Here the words are, An Ibn Abbas qal, ma kuntu adri ma qawluhu Rabbanaftah bainana wa baina qawmina bilhaq. Hatta samirtu ibnata zi yazan taqul ta'al ufatihka yani uqazika. Qatada reports from Ibn Abbas, I did not know the meaning of Rabbanaftah bainana wa baina qawmina bilhaq until I heard the daughter of Binti Zi Yazn say to her husband, Ta'al ufatihka, which meant, let's go and have our case decided. So this is the actual narrative which Ibn Athiyah has actually not referenced. Now, it may also be noted that in the opinion of As-Suddi, the word al-fath means al-qaza in the Yemenite language, and this has been posited by Suyuti in his Ad-Durrul Mansur. Now, viewers, in this regard, the third narrative, you recall, was attributed to Umar رضي الله عنه, and he was. It is said that he was not able to understand أو يأخذهم لا تخوف. So, I am now also going to recite this narrative, and the narrative actually has been recorded by Ibn Hajar in his Fathul Bari. So he writes, في قوله أو يأخذهم لا تخوف قال على تنقص وروي بإسناد فيه مجهول عن عمر أنه سأل عن ذلك فلم يجب فقال عمر ما رأى إلا أنه على ما ينتقصونه من المعاصي الله قال فخرج رجل فلقي أعرابيا فقال ما فعل فلان قال تخوفته أي تنقصته فرجع فأخبر عمر فأعجبه. So this narrative, as I said, has been recorded by Ibn Hajar in his Fathul Bari, and it says that regarding the words أَوْ يَأْخُزَهُمْ عَلَىٰ تَخَوُّفْ, it is narrated, a person within this chain is unknown, as you can see. And the words are وَرُوْوِيَا بِإِسْنَادٍ فِيهِ مَجْهُولٍ. So there is a person, we do not know who the person here is, that Umar was asked about them, and he was not able to reply. So he was not able to reply the meaning of the words أَوْ يَأْخُزَهُمْ عَلَىٰ تَخَوُّفْ. He said, I think that it means that he will grab them such that they will be in a state of loss because of their offenses committed in God's disobedience. A person went out and met a Bedouin and asked him, what did that person do? He replied, Takhawaftuhu, that is, I reduced him into a state of loss. He came back to Umar and informed him about it. And Umar was very pleased at it. So he was very pleased that he was able to know the word, the meaning of the word Takhawaftuhu as Tanakastuhu. So this is as far as the third reference that he has given. We have also a fourth reference in this regard, and this has been cited by Muslim in his Al-Jami' al-Sahih, as Ibn Athiyah himself has referred to. So this says that An Qitbat ibn Malik qala sallaytu wa salla bina Rasulullah faqara qaf wal Quran al-Majid hatta qara wal nakhla basiqat qal faj'altu uraddiduha wa la adri ma qal. Qitbah ibn Malik narrates, I prayed behind the Prophet and he read Surah Qaf from the beginning until he reached the words وَالنَّخْلَ بَاسِقَاتْ. So I started repeating them and was not able to understand what he said. So these are actually some examples which Ibn Athiyah has cited, that these various narratives tell us or show us that people were not aware of certain meanings of the Quran because they belong to different dialects, and unless the people who knew those dialects spoke of them and their meaning, some of the people as important companion as Umar himself was not able to understand the meaning because it apparently belonged to a dialect, the word that he was not very familiar with. So this is as far as the discussion is concerned regarding Ibn Athiyah. Now, Zarkashi has also said that Azari has preferred this view on the basis that when Usman ordered the copying out of the codices, he told the committee that if there is a difference of opinion between them and Zaid, they must write in the dialect of the Quraysh because most of the Quran is revealed in their language. Now, another view in this regard is that the whole of the Quran was revealed in the dialect of Mudhar. The implication probably is that this dialect would have been made of seven sub-tribes or seven sub-dialects, Mudhar itself. So this has been recorded by Ibn Habban in his As-Siqat. It says that عن علي بن أبي طالب عن عثمان بن عفان قال قال رسول الله نزل القرآن بلسان مذر. Usman ibn Affan narrates from the Prophet that the Quran was revealed in the language of the Muzar, or the Muzar tribe. Now, still another view, viewers, in this regard is that the Quran was revealed in the dialects of the two Qabs, the two famous Qabs, the Qab ibn Quraysh and Qab ibn Khuzara, on the basis of the following narrative. Now, the narrative is cited, and that is, Abu Ubaid says, وكذلك يحدثون عن سعيد بن أبي عروبة عن قتادة عن من سمع ابن عباس أنه قال نزل القرآن بلغة الكعبين قاب قريش وقاب خزاعة. قيل وكيف ذلك؟ قال لأن الدار واحدة. قال أبو عبيد يعني أن خزاعة جيران قريش فأخذوا بلغتهم. So Ibn Abbas narrates that the Quran was revealed in the dialect of the two Qabs, Qab Quraysh and Qab Khuza'a. It was inquired, how was it possible? Ibn Abbas replied, because their place was the same. Abu Ubaid says that this meant that the Khuza'a were the neighbors of the Quraysh and they adopted their dialect. So this is something which has been recorded by Abu Shamma in his Al-Murshid al-Wajiz. So, it is evident from the above narrative that there is a difference of opinion regarding the actual tribes which constitute seven. So, we have clearly seen that people are differing that which are the seven tribes which are being referred to here. And we find that there are various opinions in this regard. Now, the question obviously is very simple, that what is the basis of this decision? How do we know that which of the seven, which seven tribes are actually implied here, because the tribes are much more than seven? So, Asyuti has referred to an answer that these seven actually refer to seven eloquent tribes on the basis of the following narrative. And he recites the narrative. He says, An Ibn Abbas qal, Nazal al-Quran ala sab'i lughat, minha khams bil lughat al-ajuz min hawazin, qala wal-ajuz Sa'd ibn Bakr, wa Jushum ibn Bakr, wa Nasr ibn Muawiyah, wa Saqif, wa ha'ulai kulluhum min hawazin, wa qala lahum عليا هوازن ولهذا قال أبو عمر أمر بن الله أفسه العرب عليا هوازن والسفلى تميم يعني بني دارم. Now the hadith reference here is found in Ibn Hajar's Fathul Bari. So it is narrated from Ibn Abbas that the Quran was revealed in seven dialects, out of which five were from the Ajuz of Hawazin. Five of them belong to the Ajuz of Hawazin. And the Ajuz are, now he is describing the Ajuz, Sa'd ibn Bakr, Jushum ibn Bakr, Nasr ibn Muawiyah, and Saqif. And all of them are from Hawazin and are called the Ulya Hawazin. And for this reason, Abu Umar ibn al-Alas has said that the Ulya Hawazin and the Sufla Tamim, that is the Bani Darim, are the most eloquent of the Arabs. So this, viewers, is a summary of how our past authorities have presented their bases vis-a-vis their view or stance that the word Ahruf actually refers to seven dialects in the Quran, or the dialects found in the Quran. Now, I'll now present before you the existing criticism which this particular view has invoked by our other authorities. First of all, Zarkashi records that Ibn Qutayba has raised an objection against this view. In his opinion, as per the verse وَمَا أَرْسَلْنَا مِنْ رَسُولٍ إِلَّا بِلِسَانِ قَوْمِهِ, which is the fourth verse of Surah Ibrahim, the Quran could only have been revealed in the dialect of the Quraysh. So it is not possible to regard the Quran to have more than one dialect. It has been revealed in the dialect of the Quraysh alone. And this, as he has cited, is the fourth verse of Surah Ibrahim. And the verse simply stated means, we only send a messenger who speaks the tongue of his people. Now, Abu Shama says in his Al-Murshid al-Wajiz that this objection is answered if the interpretation of Ayub Sakhtiani is accepted. And Ayub Sakhtiani says that the word Qawm here refers to Arabs as a whole and not precisely to the Quraysh. So the answer given by him is that if we accept this Quranic verse, then the word Qawm is not actually referring to the Quraysh, it is actually referring to the Arab Qawm or the Arab people themselves. Now, Ibn Abdul Barr, on the other hand, is of the opinion that the narrative that the Quran has been revealed in the tongue of the Quraysh means that a major portion of the Quran has been revealed in the tongue of the Quraysh. It does not mean that each and every part of it was revealed in the Quraysh. And he says, for example, their dialect does not have the glottal sound Hamza, while the Quran has the Hamza. So he says that this is another interpretation, that actually when it is said that the Quran was revealed in the language of the Quraysh, it was not pointing out per se to the Quraysh. It was actually referring to the fact that the major portion of the words of the Quran belonged to the Quraysh. Now, I would also raise here the objection which has been discussed by Khuy, and it is almost similar as that of Ibn Qutayba, and it says that this view is against some narratives. Now, it is attributed to Umar that the Quran was revealed in the language of the Muzar tribe. Similarly, he had stopped Ibn Mas'ud from pronouncing Hattahin in the 35th verse of Surah Yusuf as Attahin, and wrote to him that the Quran was not revealed in the dialect of the Huzail, and that he should not teach people in this dialect. He should teach them in the dialect of the Quraysh. So what he is implying is that actually these narratives go against the view that interpretation posits, that the Quran was revealed on seven dialects. Now, it is also attributed to Zayd ibn Thabit that Usman, while addressing the committee of four who had been commissioned to make copies of the Quran, they were actually told that if there is a difference between the committee members, then Abu Bakr actually asked Zayd that they must write the Quran in the dialect of the Quraysh. So this also is a critique on this view, because this also clearly says that if there is a difference of opinion, then the dialect of the Quraysh shall prevail. In other words, this is actually negating this fact that the Quran could not have more than one dialect, and it cannot be possible that it has seven dialects, let alone. And the single dialect on which the Quran was revealed, as is posited or as adduced by the verse I cited earlier and by some of these narratives, is that it was revealed in the language or in the dialect of the Quraysh. So this is as far as the first objection is concerned. A second objection, viewers, in this regard, this has been raised by Ibn Abdul Barr in his Tamheed, and also we can find its reverberation in Imam Khuwi's Al-Bayan and Al-Baqilani's Al-Intisar and Ghamidi's Mizan. So they say that people by instinct and nature were used to a certain dialect. So it could not have been a cause of objection by others. You see, people are used to a certain dialect, and this cannot be a cause of objection by the other. And moreover, we know that Umar and Hisham both of belong to the Quraysh tribe. So how could their dialects have differed? Both were speaking and conversing in the dialects, and they were aware of the dialects of the Quraysh. So Umar would not have been alarmed when he heard Hisham reading the Quran, because both of them actually belong to the same tribe. So there could not have been any difference in their reading. And this proves that the difference which is reported in this narrative could not have been related to dialects. Because if this was the case, then Umar would not have actually been so alarmed the way he has been depicted in this narrative. This clearly shows that actually the issue is that the difference between Hisham and Umar would not have been, that dialect could not have been the cause of this difference. It has to be the words, because the nature of this of alarm which was raised by Umar and the extent to which he was shown as worried would not have happened if this was just the case. Now, the third question which comes to mind is, and which has been raised by authorities like Ghamidi in his Mizan, that if the Quran was revealed in several dialects of Arabic, why is it that close associates like Umar came to know about it in Medina, when almost two-thirds of the Quran had been revealed? So if this is how we know that there were different dialects in the Quran, and Umar was not even aware of these dialects, then this is very strange, because he was a close associate of the Prophet, and it is strange that only in Medina he came to know of the fact that the Quran was actually being revealed in more than a single dialect. The fourth question, viewers, which has been raised by Zurqani in his Manahil al-Irfan, he says that if this view is accepted, then it will have to be conceded that each tribe could not read the whole of the Quran. They would have only been able to read that portion of the Quran, actually, which was revealed in their own dialect. So the Huzail would have only been able to read the Huzail dialect. And since the Quran is also supposed to have or alleged to have had other dialects, so how would the Huzail, for example, have read the dialect of the Banu Tamim, and vice versa? So he says that this is totally absurd, and it is also against another fact. And the fact is that Umar and Hisham were actually reading the same portion, or actually discussing the same portion of Surah Furqan. The fifth question, viewers, is that this is also recorded by Zurqani in his Manahil. The fact that there are actually many more dialects in the Quran than seven. And he has actually cited Abu Bakr al-Wasiti saying that there are actually 40 dialects in the Quran. So when we say that there are 40 dialects and then we say that the Quran was revealed in seven dialects, then how can these two statements be reconciled with one another? And some of these dialects, he has actually given their example. So thus, for example, he says the Samidun in verse 61 of Surah 53, in Wa Antum Samidun belongs to the Himyar dialect. Then he says Khamra, which is the 36th verse of Surah Yusuf, in the verse actually is Inni Arani Asiru Khamra. This belongs to the Ahle Oman dialect. People of Oman used to read it like this. Then Ba'ala in verse 125 of Surah 37, the words are Atad'una Ba'alan. This belongs to the Azshanu dialect, according to him. Another example in this regard is La Yalitkum in La Yalitkum min Amalikum Shayya, which is the 14th verse of the 49th Surah of his Surah Hujurat. Now, this belongs to the Banu Abbas dialect, or the Banu Abbas dialect, in fact. Similarly, Faba'u in Surah Baqarah's 90th verse, Faba'u bi ghazabi min Allah, it belongs to the Jurham dialect. Rafasa in Fala Rafasa, which is verse 197 of Surah Baqarah, belongs to the Mudhij dialect. And similarly, Tusimun in Fihi Tusimun, which is the 10th verse of Surah Nahl, belongs to the Qasam dialect. So what actually he has said here, or presented here, is that look at the variation found in the Quran if we look at the various dialects which are found here. Now, in this regard, viewers, the sixth objection which has been read, and this has been recorded by Abu Shahba in his Al-Madkhal Lidrasat Al-Quran, that if it is accepted that there are dialects other than that of the Quraysh, then actually once the Quraysh had accepted them, they would have become part of the Quraysh dialect, and therefore they cannot be classed separately. And this is a very, very weighty view which has been presented by him, by Abu Shahba. He says that even if it is supposed that the Quran had several dialects, okay, fine. But the fact is, once that the Quraysh accepted various dialects, then they became part of the Quraysh dialect, and they cannot be classed separately. They have a subset, and they can be in they have a commonality between the Quraysh and that particular tribe. But once the Quraysh have accepted those dialects from various other tribes, then we cannot classify them separately, or we have to classify them as the Quraishian dialect. Now, in this regard, the seventh point, views which has been recorded as a critique by our past authorities, is that regarding the opinion that the Quran was revealed in the language of the Muzar tribe, Ibn Abdul Barr has quoted a view that the seven tribes among the Muzar are the Quraysh, the Kanana, Asad, Huzail, Tamim, Zabba, and Qais. This is recorded in his book Tamheed. He goes on to say that some have criticized his view that all the dialects of the Muzar are in the Quran, because among these dialects are certain very uncommon ones. For example, among them the Kashkasha of Qais and the Anana of Tamim. This is a very famous variation. So in this regard, he has also given the example. He says in the former, the key, the feminine key, addressee gender, is changed into a she with a kasra. So the qad ja'ala rabbuki tahtaki sariya, which is the 24th verse of Surah Maryam, the way it would be read by the kashkasha of the Quraysh or the Qais tribe would be qad ja'ala rabbushi tahtashi sariya. So they would replace the ki with a she. And obviously, this is something he says that this is acceptable, not acceptable. Now, in the second case, which is the anana of the meme, the word an is replaced by an. So the an by an alif is replaced by an with an ayn. And thus, the words like verse 52 of Surah Maida, which says, Asallahu ya'tiya bil fath, would be read by them as Asallahu ya'tiya bil fath. Yeah, they would replace the an, the second an, asallahu an by an, which obviously the sound would change, and this is something he says that is not acceptable. And there are other tribes who would change the sin and tha read as an into tha. Annas would be changed into annat. And similarly, ikyas would be read as ikyat. So the sin has been changed into a tha. Now, after giving these examples, he says that these dialects cannot be tolerated within the Quran and are also not narrated from any worthy scholars of the past. So how can this, the kashkasha of the caste and the anana of Banu Tamim be accepted? Now, in this regard, I would also like to present the view of Imam Hui, and he has said that if those who hold this view are of the opinion that the Quran had many dialects and the dialect of the Quraysh was not among them, then this goes against the objective of providing ease, and that these narratives mention it is in fact against established history. Because the dialect of the Quraysh was a guardian in all was a guardian over all the dialects of Arabia and had gathered in it the most eloquent dialects of Arabia. And if the other supposition is made, and that is that there are other dialects together with the dialect of Quraysh, such that there are were common words in these dialects, and that the that of the Quraysh, then these dialects cannot be limited to seven, because the Quran contains 50 dialects, as evidenced by Abu Bakr Wasiti, and I've just cited some of examples earlier on. So this, viewers, is a summary of the existing criticism on this interpretation that the seven Ahruf actually refers to seven dialects. Now, let me also add some more critique on the criticism which has already been presented, on also my view on some of the criticism. I think that almost all the critique presented carry out weight. The criticism on the objection raised by Ibn Qutaybah seems unfounded. Remember, he said that the word nation is the tribe of the Quraysh to which the Prophet belonged. So the two word, he says that if the word, his own opinion was if the word nation, qawmihi, were the words of the Quran, if they are made to refer to Arabia instead of the Quraysh, to the Arabs instead of the Quraysh, then the problem stands resolved, because the word Arab covers all the dialects. Now, this cannot be the case in my humble opinion, because the Quran clearly says that the word Qawm is not referring to all Arabs. It says that it's referring to the tongue of the tribe of the Prophet. And I'm going to recite a verse before you from the Quran, which is the 58th verse of Surah 44, Surah Dukhan. It says, فَإِنَّمَا يَسَّرْنَاهُ بِلِسَانِكَ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَذَكَّرُونَ. So it means, thus we have made the Quran truly appropriate and easy in your tongue that they may heed. Easy in your tongue that they may pay heed. Another verse in this regard is, فَإِنَّمَا يَسَّرْنَاهُ بِلِسَانِكَ لِتُبَشِّرَ بِهِ الْمُتَّقِينَ وَتُنْزِرَ بِهِ كَوْمًا لُدَّ. Thus we have made this Quran truly appropriate and easy in your tongue, that with it you may give glad tidings to the righteous and thorough warning to the contentious. So these verses clearly tell us that the word qawm is referring to the qawm or the tribe of the Prophet, which was the Quraysh. Now, in this regard, I'd also like to make this comment that as far as the foreign vocabulary of the Quran is concerned, as Abu Shahab has rightly pointed out, that once the Quraysh accepted foreign words, we can concede the fact that there are foreign words other than the dialect of the Quraysh present in the Quran. But then once the Quraysh accepted these words, these dialects as part of their own language, then we cannot object that they are different, because the Quraysh have actually adopted that dialect. So on this very basis, it cannot be accepted that the Quran was revealed in the dialect of the Mudr tribe or any other tribe, such that these dialects remain distinct from the Quraysh and were not accepted by them. So we will not accept the fact that, as I have posited or presented some of the narratives before you earlier on, which say that the Quran was revealed in the Muzar tribe. This is also, it goes against the fact that it was actually revealed on the language of the Quraysh. In this regard, viewers, the second further critique that comes to my mind is that if the seven Ahruf were meant to provide ease and facility in reading, then by revealing it in seven dialects actually disregards this ease. Because if it is tafsir, which is the basic reason for revealing the Quran in seven dialects, because as Zurqani has already pointed out, this would actually mean that reading the Quran would become difficult for certain other tribes, because they would not be aware of how to read it. So if the dialects are dispersed in the Quran, so only the tribe which is conversant with the particular dialect which belongs to its own self or tribe it will be easy to, for them to read it. But how would they be able to read the other dialect which they are not conversant with? And therefore, this whole narrative would say that the reason for revealing the Quran on 7 Ahraf was actually Taysir. It stands compromised because people would not be able to read the Quran or that part of the Quran which does not belong to their own dialect. The fourth point of further critique that comes to mind, viewers, is that this interpretation contradicts the variants of the hadith which say that the 7 ahruf are actually synonyms of Quranic words. I've already cited this hadith a number of times before you. It is found in the Musnad of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal. The fifth point of critique, the fifth further point of critique in this regard is that this interpretation is unable to explain the variant which say that the 7 ahruf were meant to provide ease to the young, old, and the unlettered, because revealing it in 7 different dialects would only have compounded their difficulties. If you recall, we have discussed this narrative in which it is said that this difference or this variation in revelation of the Quran in 7 Arab is to provide facility and ease to young people, to old people, to women, etc., so that they are able to easily read the Quran. But obviously, this would only compound their difficulties. The sixth point that comes to my mind in this regard is the four arguments which are cited by Ibn Athiyah. He's actually, if you recall, referenced four ahadiths or four narratives which belong to companions, which actually state that they were not able to understand certain words of the Quran until and unless they heard a Bedouin, etc., to have recited them. If you remember, I just had given you those four narratives earlier on before you. Now, I would like to point out that these narratives, all of these four narratives which I cited, they carry a little weight because none of them are reliably reported. None of them. Now, as far as the first of these narratives is concerned, the presence of Ibrahim ibn Mahajir and Sufyan ibn Waqi renders it absolutely weak. And if you can see that its chain of narration is being displayed before you, Ibrahim ibn Mahajir has been regarded as weak by authorities like Ibn Hajar, who says that he is Saduq Layyin al-Hifz. And Al-Mizzi records, according to Yahya ibn Sa'id al-Qattan, he is Lam Yakun Bikhawi. Yahya ibn Ma'in says that he is Zaif. And Nasai says that he is Laysa Bilqawi fil Hadith. Ibn Adi says, Hadithuhu Yuktabu fil Zu'afa. So this is some of the criticism which I am presenting before you regarding Ibrahim ibn Mahajir. Ibn Hatim comments him, Ibn Abi Hatim comments him on him by saying that Laysa biqawi yuktabu hadithuhu wala yuhtajju bihi. Ibn Hibban records he is kasirul khata, he makes a lot of errors, and that it is desirable that one abstains from narratives solely narrated by him, and that Ibn Hibban does not like adducing from narratives even in which besides him there are other trustworthy narrators, because he abundantly reports maqloob narratives. Furthermore, viewers, if you can see from the chain of narration being displayed before you, from Ibrahim ibn Muhajir, the person who reports is Sufyan ibn Waqi. Now, Sufyan ibn Waqi is also a person whose character we have the following information vis-a-vis his nature of transmission. So Al-Mizzi has said in the opinion of Yahya ibn Sa'id al-Qattan, he is Lam Yakun Bikawi. Yahya ibn Ma'in regards him to be Zaif. And one of the opinions expressed by Al-Nasai about him is that he is Laysa Bilqawi fil Hadith. And another is that he is Laysa Bihi Ba'as. Abu Ahmad ibn Adi say about him that Wa Hadithuhu Yuktabu fil Zu'afa. And Abu Hatim is of the opinion that Laysa biqawi and that Yuktabu hadithuhu wala yuhtajju bihi. Ibn Hibban has mentioned him in his book Al-Majruheen and opined that he is Kasirul Khata. He makes a lot of errors, and that it is better to refrain from him because it is better to refrain from which he is the sole narrator, and that in Ibn Hibban's opinion, he does not like to adduce from the narratives he reports which are in conformity with reliable narrators because of his tendency to bring maklubat. Now, this is as far as the first narrative is concerned, which was cited earlier on. Now, in the chain of narration of the second narrative, viewers, this narrative is from actually Ibn Abbas, and from Ibn Abbas, Qatada is the person who reports from him. Now, Qatada ibn Di'ama is placed after Ibn Abbas, as you can see. Now, Rijal authorities regard that among the companions, Qatada was only able to hear from Anas ibn Malik. So he was the only companion that Qatada heard was Anas ibn Malik, and he could never have heard from Abdullah ibn Abbas. So this has been actually cited by Ibn Hajar in his Tehzeeb al-Tehzeeb, and he says, وَقَالَ الْحَاكِمُ فِي الْأُمُ الْحَدِيثِ لَمْ يَسْمَعْ قَتَادَ مِنْ صَحَابِينَ غَيْرَ أَنَسِ وَقَدْ ذَكَرَ ابْنُ أَبِي حَاتِمَ عَنْ أَحْمَدَ ابْنِ حَمْلِ مِثْلَ ذَلِكَ. Hakim in his Ulum al-Hadith says that the only companion from which Qatada heard was Anas ibn Malik. Ibn Abi Hatim has quoted a similar view from Ahmad ibn Hanbal. So we can see that in this particular narrative, if Qatada is reporting from Ibn Abbas, and our authorities are telling us that the only person that he reported from was Anas ibn Malik, then of course this cannot be true, and this narrative is also munqata, and thus it is also unreliable. Now the chain of narration, if you recall, viewers of the third narrative, had a majhool person in it, and you can see it being displayed before you. The actual words are in the chain of narration, and one of the mention is an rajulin, which means that we do not know who the person from whom who reports from Umar radiallahu ta'ala anhu. So the actual person who reports from Umar is unknown, and so therefore, viewers, this also cannot be accepted. Viewers, the fourth narrative is also suspect. It is reported by Qutbah ibn Malik, and its chain of narration is appearing on your screen. You can see it being displayed before you. In this narrative, which is from Qutbah ibn Malik, Abu Awana Wazza ibn Abdullah is suspect. Abu Hatim's opinion about him is that he is trustworthy when he narrates from his book, but when he narrates from his memory, he makes a lot of mistakes. His words are, Kana yaghlatu kathira. Now, regarding the narrative attributed to Usman that the Quran was revealed in the dialect of Muzar tribe, we have already discussed this narrative. Now, its chain of narration is also weak because of the presence of Muhammad ibn Aban ibn Salih. You can see the chain of narration being displayed before you. And as far as the chain of narration, if this narrative is concerned, the person who is actually suspect in the eyes of our these narrators is that Ibn Hajar records that Abu Dawud and Yahya ibn Ma'in regards Muhammad ibn Abban ibn Saleh to be Za'if. Al-Bukhari regards him to be Laysa bil-Qawi. In the opinion of Al-Nasai, he is Laysa bil-Siqa. Ibn Abban regards him to be Za'if. Abu Hatim says about him, Yuktabu hadithu ala majaz wala yuhtajju bihi. Ibn Habban says, Kana mimman yukhallibu al-akhbar walahu waham, walahu wahmul kasir fil asar. So this is what Ibn Hajar has recorded in his narrative. And the last part that I've read out before you is actually a quotation or a citation from Ibn Habban's Al-Majruheen. Now, regarding the narrative attributed to Ibn Abbas that the Quran was revealed in the dialects of the two Ka'bs, viewers, this is now a comment on some of the other narratives besides those four narratives which I had discussed earlier on, which tell us that the Quran was revealed on other dialects. I am now discussing those. So regarding the narrative attributed to Ibn Abbas, which says that the Quran was revealed in the dialects of the two Ka'bs, which was the Ka'b of Quraysh and the Ka'b ibn Quraysh and the Ka'b ibn Khaza. Now its chain of narration is weak because we have a mubham person in it. We do not know who is the person who narrates from Ibn Abbas. He is the person who lies between Ibn Abbas and Qatada, but he is not known. Now, regarding the narrative of Ibn Abbas cited by Suyuti vis-a-vis the seven eloquent dialects, this complete chain of narration is now being displayed before you. You can see the Arabic text before you. Now, it is evident from the chain of narration that the teacher of Abu Ubaid is not known, because as you can see, it says, An Abi Ubaid al-Qasim alayhi salam, An Shaykhin lahu. So the Shaykh or the teacher of Abu Ubaid is not known. You can also see that a jar on Muhammad ibn Sa'ib al-Kalbi has been recorded by Ibn Hajar. He says that Mu'tamar ibn Sulaiman reports from his father that there are two liars in Kufa, and one of them is Kalbi. Yahya ibn Ma'in says that he is Laysa Bishay. Al-Bukhari says that Yahya ibn Sa'id and Ibn Mahdi have forsaken him. Abu Hatim says that people are unanimous in forsaking his narratives. He is Zaibul Hadith and not worthy of being paid attention to. An-Nasai says that he is not Sika. Wala yuktabu hadithuhu. According to Ali ibn al-Junayd, al-Hakim and al-Darqutni, he is Matruk. He is forsaken. He He's abandoned. Al-Juzjani says that he is a kazab, saqit. Ibn Hibban says that he narrates tafsir for Ibn Abbas from Abu Saleh, and the latter has never heard from Ibn Abbas, and that it is not allowed to deduce from him. As-Sadi says that he is matrukul hadith and za'ifun jiddan because of his intense inclination to tashayyu. Al-Hakim says that he narrates fabricated narratives from Abu Saleh. And Abu al-Bukhari says that Abu Saleh once said to Kalbi that whatever he narrates to him is a lie. So viewers, this is a summary of the critique on this interpretation of the seven hour of narrative. In the last part of my discussion, I have actually critiqued the chains of narration of the four narratives which were referenced by Ibn Atiyah to adduce his view, and also later on some of the other narratives regarding the revelation of the Quran in various dialects. And as you can see, that none of these narratives have been soundly reported. So all in all, we can say that this particular interpretation of the narrative is also not convincing. And in the next session, I shall bring up the other remaining interpretations of this narrative, and inshallah, then I'll go on to assess the chains of narration of this narrative as recorded in our hadith books. Till then, أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين والمسلمات.